Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics Podcast. It's day three of the Tory Party conference. Boris Johnson has given a speech, as has Sajid Javid, the Home Secretary. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm here in Birmingham with Katie Bowles and James Forsyth. Now, James, just after breakfast, you and I were strolling up to the hall. We were stopped by a delegate saying, do we know what route Boris is going to take on his way into the hall? Now, this is becoming a bit of a tradition for Boris, that the arrival itself is so he comes in the back of a donkey and the delegates will wave palms at him and things. I mean, so he does like his theatre. Did it work for him?
This is a technique that Boris pioneered when he was Mayor of London, a kind of smash and grab raid on Tory conference. You do one big event, you only turn up for a few hours, so everyone who wants to see you has to queue up. And he got what he wanted today, Boris Johnson. Huge queues round the block, a full auditorium, an auditorium that seemed to me noticeably fuller than the conference hall has been at any point so far in this conference.
And the party managers gave him this big auditorium.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some Tory MPs who are furious that Boris Johnson was able to book the largest room inside the secure zone other than the conference hall. I think that will lead to some questions about the organisation. I thought what was striking about his speech was it was about so much more than Chequers and Europe. He started off talking about housing policy, from there to local government finance, and then on to a no new taxes pledge, you know, no new tax increases, quite a contrast with Philip Hammond yesterday. And I think this was, as Katie says in her blog, this was Boris Johnson setting out his stall. He was saying, look, here is my alternative agenda. If you don't want to, if you want to put clear blue water between the Tory party and Jeremy Corbyn, here's how to do it.
So Katie, you saw this as a Boris manifesto then?
I think it was a Boris manifesto, and I don't think they'd even really deny that, because he just listed his views on such a comprehensive range of topics that you couldn't really call it anything else. And it wasn't really a Brexit rally. He did get on to Brexit, obviously.
Interesting,
and the crowd lapped that up when he said Chuck Chequers, and I think probably the loudest cheer he got from the whole thing was when he attacked the Michael Gove approach. And he didn't do it by name, but he said he dismissed those Brexiteers or those people who say just get out and fix it later.
We've got a clip of that. Let's listen to it now.
Do not believe that we can somehow get it wrong now. Bodge it now and fix it later. Get out properly. That is a total fantasy.
I thought what was striking about this is that Boris Johnson is normally very genial in these speeches, even as he is suggesting that people might be tried under 14th century laws because Chequers puts the country under foreign courts and all this stuff. He does it with a smile. In that moment, I thought he was genuinely angry. And I think this is his feeling that Michael Gove let him down at Chequers. You know, obviously that relationship is, to put it mildly, complicated. But I thought that you really sensed his anger there at that moment.
Yeah, I think there was also there was some mastery to the wide-ranging speech. So we went from Boris Johnson suggesting that if we went to this 14th century law, everyone who wrote the Chequers document could be prosecuted because you'll be giving the EU too many powers. And that would suggest that perhaps even Theresa May could. And then he ended it by saying, but I'm very loyal to Theresa May and I just support her. And I also think, are you going to support her through the trial you're trying to bring?
And James, we've seen at this conference people having a pop at Boris. And the first day, Digby Jones was being rude about Boris, and he was cheered by the hall. And we've had smaller versions of that. So it has seemed as if those who are rude about Boris tend to get rewarded by the crowd or applauded by the crowd. But then again, when Jacob Rees-Mogg or Boris turns up, we see huge amounts of enthusiasm, which stands in rather stark contrast with those people emerging from the main platform speeches. So insofar as it's possible to judge, is this a conference that you think would be receptive to a Boris leadership pitch?
It feels to me like there are two conferences going on here. There's a conference in the hall with the platform speakers that's relatively staid, and then there's a conference out on the fringe which is much more rambunctious, that what desperately is yearning for kind of new ideas, you know, people who are calling to kind of for a bolder Brexit or to cut taxes are going to get big applause. It does seem to me that there are two conferences going on. I think one of the challenges for Theresa May in her leader speech tomorrow is to try and kind of reassert herself. You know, she cannot, she needs to infuse the hall, because the hall hasn't appeared very infused at any point in this conference so far.
Now, Katie, if there is a stop Boris candidate, it's probably Sajid Javid at the moment. So we heard from him this morning. Here's what he had to say.
But let me tell you another story. A story which started in the 1960s. Abdul Ghani Javid left Pakistan and landed in Heathrow. He spent what little he had on a coach ticket and spent his first night right here in Birmingham. Then he continued up north to Lancashire to find work on a cotton mill. After standing outside that mill for weeks, he got that first job, and then he started a family. Eventually, there were seven of us living in a two-bedroom flat on what the papers called Britain's most dangerous street. That's my story. And if you had told me then what I would be doing now, I would tell you it's less believable than any TV drama. That makes me so proud, not just for myself and my family, but for my country. So, what does the Conservative Party have to offer a son of an immigrant crid from a working class background from Rochdale? You made him Home Secretary.
So, Katie, Sajid's backstory, that word oft used in politics, is quite strong. He's playing it here. So is he putting himself forward?
I think you can't say anyone isn't putting themselves forward when they say something like that. And also just of every single speech. I mean, this conference has become a leadership parade, and that is partly Number 10's fault for a lack of agenda, which has meant that that's what we read into everything. But you don't have to read very hard to see these elements in every speech. And Saj is widely seen as the stop Boris candidate. He is very popular, but at the same time he did suffer slightly from timing, because around the time he was taken to the main hall, you had hundreds of activists panically trying to get him to the Boris event. I think despite that, he cut a statesmanlike figure, and you also had the big announcement, which is, you know, looking at this immigration policy, which was briefed overnight. So I think it looked like his was a department which is doing things, combined with the backstory. So I think it was a positive speech for him.
And James, the Prime Minister seems to have stolen him his immigration announcements. Was this a bit mean of her?
I think that you might say that. But I think one of the other striking things was the different tonal way in which they did it. That Sajid Javid wants to talk about his department being the Home Office, not a Ministry of Interior, kind of trying to make it sound a kind of more welcoming place. And he was very clever to emphasise, you know, openness. But at the same time, he obviously, his parents being immigrants themselves, he is able to, politically, has a space to kind of demand more in terms of British values, learning English, and all of those things. I also thought today was important for Sajid Javid, because Sajid Javid is not a natural platform speaker. He's never going to be a Demosthenes or a Cicero. But what he had to do today was to show that he could be that he could be adequate at that. And if politics is like a decathlon, he's shown that he has improved sufficiently in his weakest event to be a proper medal contender.
And Katie, he was trying to set a different tone to the kind of Theresa May hostile environment, Home Office, and you might regard her style of politics in general. Listen to this, for example, what he had to say about Diane Abbott.
We see people from diverse backgrounds succeeding in all walks of life and in all levels. This progress is happening in our politics too. That requires role models and pioneers. People on all sides, including people that we wouldn't normally praise in our party conference. People like Diane Abbott. Yes, Diane Abbott. We might disagree with the Shadow Home Secretary on almost all her policies, but it takes guts and determination to be the first black woman to be elected to the House and Commons, and we should pay tribute to that.
Exactly. I think no one, if you're told everyone in advance that the conference hall was going to applaud Diane Abbott, I think you would have thought it would be some kind of gaffe or joke they'd be going for.
Yeah.
So I think it did separate him and actually suggest that he was a slightly different type of politician than some of the previous ones that have gotten on the stage. We've seen a lot attacking Labour. A lot of it's been very valid, but it was interesting that he decided not to just completely bash Corbyn, and he decided to praise Diane Abbott for some of her achievements.
Now, James, there's not much else going to happen today, other than, of course, the Spectator Party this evening, which is always the greatest event and conference. Tomorrow, we've got the Prime Minister. Now, Has she ever in her life given a speech that has left people skipping out of any hall?
I think she can give a good speech. She has given good speech in the past because she can make an argument in a speech. This can be one of her strengths. I think the challenge for her tomorrow is this, is that I've always thought that politics is a little bit like volleyball, right? You can only score points on your own serve. And so far on this conference, you know, the disruption of Boris today and this and that is you're left wondering whether this is her serve or whether all she can do is kind of pull things back rather than move the ball forward.
Right. And Katie, there will be lots of people watching in the hall who will remember what it was like this time last year. Who can ever forget? So it's fair to say that the bar for her is set reasonably low this time.
Set reasonably low. And actually what I've gathered from just being here a few days, talking to people in Number 10, talking to ministers and MPs, is really they just want to get through it. And I don't think they're even that apologetic about that aim anymore. There is a feeling that if you look forward for the next couple of months, they're going to be very rocky. The big events are all about Brexit, getting this deal through. And there's a sense that actually, were you even to have I see people might disagree with this, but were you to have an agenda setting conference, there's quite a high chance that in 5 weeks' time your agenda would be derailed anyway. So you might as well just regroup and focus on 2019.
I think the one thing is, we all three of us have seen Theresa May deliver speeches several times since that speech last year. Most of the people in that hall will not have done so. So I think she will get more credit with them for getting back up on the stage than we think.
She might play her Iron Lady Brexit Boudica kind of cards.
Yeah. I also think that Salzburg puts her in a slightly easier position because she's not trying to sell Chequers. She is demanding that the EU treats this country with respect, which is an easier sell to a Tory audience. One of the things I'm watching for tomorrow is that there is this debate in her circle about whether she should be frank with the activists and say, look, you're not going to get everything you want out of this Brexit deal, but I'm going to get you the best deal that anyone can for Britain. Or whether she should be striking a more emollient tone on Brexit. And I think that will tell you something about how confident they're feeling, whether she does a bit of, look, guys, trust me to get the best deal. You're not going to get everything you want, but it will be the deal that works best for the country, in her opinion. You know, I am the national interest. I understand the national interest kind of approach.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes Store. Also, we've got a new podcast station, Spectator Radio, where we've got one of our many podcasts being released every single day. You can find that on the iTunes Store or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Cindy Yu, who produced the podcast.